lovely morning here in the North Coast region. My name is Stephen Moore. Oh no, this is a very, very green and lush up here. That could be said for a lot of the state. My name is Stephen Moore. I'm a board member on the State Water Resource Control Board and also liaison to the North Coast region. Today I'd like to start off with a little update on things going on at the State Board. There's been some changes in upper management recently, or that are forthcoming. You may know that the vice chair, Fran Spivey Weber, retired in March, and she's just got back from Paris, France. So I think she's doing quite well and very happy in her new role as a retired State Water Board member. I also wanted to, before I get into that too much, I wanted to welcome Board Member Bedoya to the North Coast Water Board. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance and look forward to working with you in the years to come. And of course, Board Member Hales, I also feel I have a lot in common with him, and appreciate his very substantive contributions to this North Coast Regional Board over the years. And very sorry to see him go, but understand, you know, life calls, and maybe we'll see you back around before too long in the water board system. So getting back to the State Board, also Tom Howard, our executive director, is retiring at the end of this month. And so we've received applications in April for the position of executive director of the State Water Board and have conducted interviews for that position and hope to make a decision by the end of this month at around the time that he retires. So a couple things going on. I guess I should make a note that with the vice chair retiring, the State Water Board members held an election and elected myself as the new vice chair of the State Water Board. So just to let you know. It's just a little side note. We also have a new board member, you may have heard, Mr. Joaquin Esquivel. He grew up in the La Quinta area near Palm Springs, Palm Desert, and Salton Sea. He's the son of educators in the area and a grandson of farmers in the Coachella Valley. And he had recently worked at the Natural Resources Agency of California, representing the governor in Washington, D.C., and he used to serve in Senator Barbara Boxer's office. He'll be the liaison to the Colorado River region, where he grew up, and the San Diego region. And I'm shifting around a little bit, but I'm staying here with you all at the North Coast, so I'm glad to let you know that. I'll continue to liaison here. But then I'm, as vice chair, taking on two additional regions and trading Central Coast with Dee Adamo, and then I will be liaison to the Santa Ana region, and as well as the Los Angeles region, picking up for Fran, which will be, you know, a challenge living in the Bay Area. But Joaquin actually has a residence in Washington, D.C., so we have to shift around and manage expectations in terms of getting around the state and communicating. But we will carry on, and you know, in that spirit, we had the annual chairs meeting last month, where all the chairs of the regional boards get together in person at the state building in Sacramento. And we covered some good ground there. One of the items we talked about, better coordination between the State Water Board and the regional water boards whenever the State Board takes on a statewide initiative that has direct impact on the regional board's workload, workflow, specifically general permits and policies and the like. And Chair Wolf of the regional board in Central Coast did some homework, did some surveying of different board members around the state to get a sense of where some concerns were and what things were working well. And there's, as you know, a host, and I brief you on these periodically, a host of general orders that and policies that we've taken up in the last few years, like the compost order, you know, for composting facilities, or aquifer storage and recovery type permit that Central Valley Board helped with. So we continue to try to engage regional board staff and their subject matter expertise on specific initiatives where it may prove to be most efficient to have one instrument at the statewide level, and then the implementation can be carried out on a day-to-day basis by regional board staff. So that, you know, the permitting workload gets taken up at the state level with regional input, and then the day-to-day work with stakeholders and getting problems addressed can be done at the staff level. More hands-on, less paperwork. That's the goal, but it is challenging sometimes to have a good communication between the state and regional board staff. So that's one example of an ongoing conversation that we have at the annual chairs meeting, the monthly chairs calls. And then, of course, I want to draw your attention to the annual meeting of board members, which we call the Water Quality Coordinating Committee, WQCC. It's now scheduled for Wednesday, Thursday, October 25th and 26th. And we have a planning committee of chairs that we just met yesterday talking about the agenda for this coming year's WQCC, which is a day and a half. And we go over communications with the governor's office and legal staff and legislative staff. But then we choose topics to really drill down on together. And this year we're really going to focus on climate change and climate adaptation and mitigation. And so we're going through right now what folks we might invite, and also getting the panel set up of state agency folks that are working on climate adaptation and mitigation. And I think I may have briefed you on the fact that one of Fran Spivey Weber's last contributions culminated on March 7th. We adopted a resolution called Comprehensive Response to Climate Change. And that was the architect of that was Max Gomberg of our staff in the Office of Research Planning and Performance. He's our climate point person, and he'll help us put together the panel of scientists and agency folks, and then regional board members talking about how we're addressing climate change around the state. There'll be other topics, but we're still working through the details on that. So, as always, I like to try to give you a sense or a quick budget update each time I do my report, and then what recent activities the State Board has done that you might be of interest to this region, and then upcoming activities, and then finally a touch on some legislation that's being discussed at this time. First, the budget. Out of 13... Well, I have 17 here, but we have 8 of our budget change proposals have been approved all the way through the Senate and Assembly of the 13 or 17. And there's still some being considered. A lot of them are positions at the State Board for things like SGMA, you know, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, catching up on underground storage tank, orphan site cleanup fund work, and processing the workload for the claims under the underground storage tank program, the water quality certification work for the Klamath project, you know, the proposed dam removals for the state board water rights division. But there appears to be some timber program conversion of the limited term positions to permanent positions, so that's probably good news for the folks that work in the timber program here. So those have been approved, and there's some other things. The irrigated lands program, which all regions share a concern about the staffing level, and the chairs, we got together, proposed an augmentation in that program last year for this budget of on the order of 30 positions, 30. It went to zero. Department of Finance said no, and then we went back to them and really used the fact that the chairs all thought it was a priority to convince them to add the positions back. They did, but not 30. It was 5. Now that's being held open right now in the Senate, so they're looking at that proposal. But, you know, it's a fee-supported program. There would be concerns about fees being increased, I'm sure, among stakeholders. But this is a situation where we're trying to address really a backlog of workload throughout the state. So a little bit on budget. And on recent activities, I would like to let you know that we amended the statewide plans, the Inland Surface Waters and Enclosed Bays and Estuaries Plan, to define three beneficial uses for tribal cultural use, tribal subsistence fishing, and general subsistence fishing. This builds on work of this North Coast Water Board in terms of defining tribal and cultural uses, and it stimulated a long-term statewide discussion. And so now the state board's adopted these definitions based on stakeholder input, and it sets the stage for other regions and your own region to look, consider in your basin planning work, where if there's priority to designate these uses for protection related to our programs of water quality protection. And so it's the first step is having a consistent statewide definition. And coupled with that, we adopted five water quality objectives for mercury because of the, and there's a relationship, of course, between fishing and fish consumption and mercury levels in tissue. And these relate to human health protection for sport and commercial fishing, which is on the order of one meal per week. And then for the tribal subsistence fishing, if the uses are adopted, we recommend a level in fish tissue that's about five times more stringent because, based on the statewide surveys conducted by UC Davis, an assumption of four to five meals per week is more accurate with respect to tribal subsistence fishing, just to give you an example. And so that process would be triggered at the regional board level. It would be up to regional boards to carry out the implementation of those uses and associated mercury endpoints. Also, mercury endpoints relate to wildlife protection, and that was a large driver, a lawsuit settlement that EPA would have to adopt wildlife-based water quality objectives for mercury. There was a deadline this year, I think it was June 30th, so we were on a timeline to adopt these wildlife-based criteria, which are on the same level as the human health-based criteria in terms of prey fish tissue. So it was a complicated technical package. It was peer-reviewed by four notable scientists, and in the end, we did adopt the staff recommendation. This month, we also held a hearing on the, you may have heard that when we had the Division of Drinking Water come to the State Board, we also inherited the Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program, or ELAP. I don't know if that's a program near and dear to your hearts, but it's critical importance to have quality data that our water boards rely on to make decisions in our day-to-day work. And the ELAP program certifies laboratories throughout the state. California, among the 50 states, has the most labs that would require accreditation. 700, I think, was about the level of labs, and that includes commercial labs, but also many diffuse municipal and public agency labs that might only do two or three analyses. And so there's a concern that these smaller facilities would struggle with what an expert panel recommended we adopt a national standard for the accreditation program. And ELAP had been under fire and criticism for, you know, meeting its performance standards. And so this expert panel has been advising us on how to get the program up and running, as we like to do when we're having problems in California. We like, if you know, in relation to other states, we pride ourselves in going from worst to first, which we did with the drinking water SRF program, by the way, just as an aside. So I'm hopeful that the ELAP program we're on the right track to really bolster our reputation nationwide. So we're that's an ongoing process, but we got an update this month on where that's going, and we affirmed the expert panel's advice on how to go forward to improve the ELAP program. So I'd like to touch briefly on some upcoming things that I hope that staff here and the board are interested in. We just adopted, I guess, one last thing. We adopted the fees for the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And in the case where the state would have to intervene, and we've reached that point. Remember when SGMA was first adopted, it seemed so far into the future that we might reach the point where the state would have to intervene in case the locals were not willing or able to start management of the groundwater basins in a sustainable way. The first step is this July 1st, groundwater sustainability agencies are supposed to be formed, institutional structure to implement SGMA. And there's a map that we released a couple weeks ago that showed gray color for the basins that have filed and proposed groundwater sustainability agencies and that don't overlap or leave significant unmanaged areas. And there's a red determination for basins that haven't yet filed or continue to be unmanaged. And, you know, there's still, how many days left? We still have 40 days or so. So I'm confident that we'll see a lot more submittals coming in. But in the meantime, we have to prepare for you know, our staff to be ready in the groundwater management unit to be ready to roll out a regulatory program. And so we've been meeting over the last year with stakeholders and floating ideas about fee levels, and we got a lot of input that our fees were actually too low and we needed to create more of an incentive for locals to do local management of groundwater basins. In the end, the fees are around $300 a year per well, and plus or minus based on whether there's intervention necessary and what level of intervention the state has to create. You know, if there's a interim plans that have to be developed, that's the worst case in terms of how much staff time it would take for us to manage. And so, you know, the fees can mount significantly to the point where, you know, it might be $8,000. So it's stepwise based on the level of effort that we build into the assessment. So those fees were adopted this week and sets the stage for us to be able to fund the initial rollout of our program. Our assumptions on the level of funding was intervening in roughly 5, maybe as many as 10 groundwater basins in the coming year as the gatekeeper. And there are incentives there for folks to meter their wells. It's not that we require meters, but if you meter your well, that $8,000 or $5,000 fee comes down precipitously to $2,000 per year. And within a year, you've paid for your meter. So we're trying to create those incentives within the fee structure. I want to let you know that. And thank you, and you know, we'll thank you over and over as far as the work that North Coast Region has done to address cannabis-related discharges in the general permit or in the waiver that you've adopted. I forget, was it a waiver? Yeah, it was not waste discharge requirements. And so coming up as part of the SB, what was it, I'm trying to remember the number, was it 837? 835. You know, the California Department of Food and Ag is starting a new program dealing with cannabis as a commodity, and to carry out the licensing The folks have to adhere to a state board sanctioned program to protect water quality and also to address water rights. And so we're on a fairly fast timeline and are going to build on lessons learned and suggestions for the North Coast. But I just want to let you know, on June 2nd, we plan to release for public comment the Cannabis Principles and Guidelines Policy. And it involves not only the discharge aspects, but also the diversion for water water quantity. And so there is we have a document in-house as far as how we're planning to organize the water quality control policy for cannabis cultivation. So in June 2nd, this will be released for public comment, and we have a fast timeline to, by October 17th, have an adoption hearing for these cannabis guidelines. And so you probably know more about this issue than I do in terms of the details of how that's structured, but that's the timeline before us at the State Board, and we look forward to working closely with your staff on that. And for those interested in the recycled water indirect potable reuse issue, we are scheduling in mid-August, August 16th, the adoption hearing for the surface water augmentation regulations that our Division of Drinking Water is putting forward for indirect potable reuse of recycled water that's put into reservoirs. We already have the groundwater regs, and this year we plan to adopt the reservoir regs. So those are some of the upcoming items. And as far as legislation goes, you probably know that there's a lot of proposed legislation around the conservation issue, you know, in terms of the long-term conservation framework that the governor has supported. And as there's probably 8 assembly bills, I think, under consideration for that. But I just want to point you to the fact that our staff has been working with the governor's office on trailer bill language that would set up the process for us to adopt ultimately standards for long-term conservation that's based on principles of what's reasonable in indoor use and and then outdoor use that's calibrated to climate and that sort of thing. And so on April 26th, the drought was considered over by the governor. Actually, April 7th, he formally lifted the drought emergency. But there was a resolution that we issued on April 26th that rescinded the mandatory conservation requirements but kept the reporting requirements in place till November. So it'll be like a bridge between the emergency regulation and a long-term framework. We'll continue to get monthly reports on conservation levels now that we're emerging from the drought. Looking at, through this summer, we'll be able to month by month look at performance and be able to answer questions on whether people have rebounded to old habits or if the conservation ethic of California has really taken hold. And so it'll be interesting to see that information unfold over this year. But in terms of legislation, there's a number of bills that are related to that. We hope that, thank you, that's nice. We hope that the trailer bill language does go through, because it does set up a process that's very public and open. It's not a fast-track regulation, but it just gives us the ability to get started sooner in terms of having our meetings with stakeholders and having public hearings about what potential standards could look like. I would draw your attention to AB 277 from Mathis. It's a proposed water and wastewater loan and grant program. You know, there's been some concern that with the passing of the drought, the safety net of funding for emergency drinking water or disadvantaged communities may not be available. And so this AB 277 attempts to fill that gap, authorizing the state board to establish a program to provide funding for counties and qualified nonprofits to award grants and low-interest loans to eligible low-income homeowners and small water systems for a variety of drinking water and wastewater projects, including extending or connecting service lines from an adjacent water or wastewater system to the applicant's residence or plumbing, paying connection fees or charges, and paying to close abandoned septic tanks and water wells to protect health and safety, or deepening or improving existing groundwater wells and installing water treatment systems. This really addresses a safety net that we've been trying to provide in working with locals and technical assistance experts for rural communities. Another item is SB 5 from De Leon. This, as you know, in 2014, we had the $7.5 billion water bond that voters approved. It's we've already expended many of those funds, or they're applied for. And there still is, a need, a demand for additional funding at the state level to address drought resiliency and other issues around the state. And so Senator De Leon has proposed SB 5 as another additional $3 billion for general obligation bond funding for clean drinking water, drought preparedness, and it also has parks and recreation included, and protection of coastal and ocean resources, and climate change adaptation and resiliency. So that'll be a bill to continue to watch. Finally, I wanted to note that I think last time I was here, I said that the stakeholders here in this region, that especially in the Coho Bering streams with the Russian River Emergency Regulation, provided the State Board a lot of information, and it's really incumbent upon us to come back to this area to report on what we've found and to do feedback loop to folks who provide the information. I was hoping that we'd be having something scheduled in this time frame. I checked with staff and they are looking at late August, and they selected a date tentatively on August 28th. They're reserving the Veterans Memorial Auditorium here in Santa Rosa to be able to give a presentation on the groundwater extraction data and the water supply diversion data in the four tributary streams of the Russian that are Coho Bering that were the subject of the emergency regulation. So I wanted to at least let you know that that was continuing to move along, however, more slowly than I had hoped. And I think with that, I've taken up a great deal of your time. I'm sure there's things I've overlooked that you're interested in, but I appreciate the opportunity to give you an overview of things at the State Board and welcome any questions that if I don't have the answer, I can go and find the answer for you. Thanks.
Well, thanks for that report, and congratulations on your new post. I'm glad you'll still be working with this region. And do any board members have questions for Board Member Moore?
So on the well program, is there a link to the policy and what the thresholds are and the goals of that program?
And this is the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act?
Yeah, I guess that is.
Oh, I'm not sure when the well program.
I'm assuming, are you referring, Ms. Gant, to the fees for the new wells or for well development?
We're going to be doing our best to try to make that as easy to for folks to be able to comply with as possible. We're working on a form right now that's simple to use, and we're piloting it in some areas. That will be, part of our challenge will be the rollout of this information and the communication to folks so they know what the rules are and, what the timelines are for compliance. So
is the program public? Is it written up and available online?
I think it's under development. Okay. I can't say that it's ready to roll. We're getting the infrastructure set up, recognizing You know, that's, we're going to be dealing with thousands of people, and so we need to keep things as simple as possible. And so obviously we'll use our website and have a portal on the home page for folks to be able to quickly get to where they need to get. But the goal of Sigma, I mean, we can't say it enough, is local control and local management. And so we'll consider it a success if we have the least possible intervention. But in those cases where we do, we're going to do our best to be to make things as simple as possible for folks to comply.
Do you happen to know the threshold?
There is a de minimis definition in Sigma, 2 acre feet per year. And so what that effectively does is for minor domestic use, folks aren't in a position to have to do extensive reporting. That will only be in cases of very extreme sensitivity. So it's really for the larger diverters that this is focused on.
Board Member Corbett?
Yes, first I wanted to thank you on the Klamath. I know your support has always been stout over the years and ongoing, but it's really appreciated, and we're at a critical stage, and with obviously almost a minus leadership from Washington, D.C., so it falls on the state of California, and I appreciate you doing that. Second of all, I wanted to thank you for staying here. Continuity with regional boards does make a difference. It would be undiplomatic to all the other board members who sacrificed and served with us to call you the very best, so I'll just say that you're an extremely good representative of the state for us, and I appreciate that. I want to ask you, under the transfer of drinking water and public health, where does the PSP, or paralytic shellfish poisoning program, did that stay with public health? Did that get transferred over? If it did get transferred over, I have some regulatory gap issues that I'd like to discuss, but if it didn't, that's fine too.
You know, we are so fortunate to have Chief Deputy Director John Bishop here from the State Board to be able to answer that question.
Okay, thank you. As Board Member Steve Moore said, my name is Jonathan Bishop. I'm the Chief Deputy Director, and I will confirm this, but I'm pretty sure that the drinking water and the lab certification program came over with us. We did not get any of public health's other duties, and so I'm pretty confident that we did not get that one. Okay. But I will make sure that I get back to Matt, and he can forward you if I'm incorrect on that.
Yeah. Okay, and the issue is, it's in the past always been advisory. This year, because of the desire, because we had very bad paralytic shellfish poisoning, the state wanted a very clear message, so the California Department of Fish and Game actually put it into their fish and game regulations, which, of course, would be binding. I suspect that's only going to be a one-time only, and, of course, they'd retain that authority. But do you want where it's binding or not, because they're not binding, is the thought process I'm working on. Mm-hmm. I did want to indicate climate change, one of the areas, and I'd hoped we could have gotten into it, but the ship has left the station, is we have two entities in Humboldt Bay, and this would only apply to Humboldt and San Francisco Bay, have determined with great vigor and vim two different levels of sea level rise. They both are going into the sewage treatment process, and you got to amortize these things over a number of years. There is a fair difference in the cost and the design of the facilities. So I would ask, I'm going to be two-faced here. I'm going to ask the state to do two things. One, set a statewide standard, and then two, have some exception criteria, because we have, in Humboldt Bay, there's a part that's going down because of geologic reasons and not the bay regions, and so you want some site-specific information. But before we invest a lot of money in sewer, either that isn't enough taking it into account or is taking it too much, we really, I think, need some guidance to make sure, and it's going to fall in your lap anyway, but on the financing of them, that it's being handled in the way we get the most bang for the buck. And then I have one last question. I was at the Aqua California Association of Water Agencies, and they had some really excellent legal sessions. They were going quite a bit involved in the San Francisco Bay Delta issue, which, and of course we have Judge Roby's decision and the State Board decision where that's clearly water quality and water quantity were established there, and that's clearly the case, and I'm not, I think everybody's accepting of that. But the issue came up that regional boards didn't have authority to set flows, and I know Tom Howard was very strong on saying that we did have that authority. So I wonder, is the State Board still going to maintain that posture that we do have authority, although we've been very judicious on how we've used it?
All right. I think John wants to.
Okay.
So I think there's two parts to that. We believe that you have authority to set minimum flows, but you don't have any authority to implement them through water rights.
Right. Yeah.
And the State Board would then need to take those and use those to set water right conditions.
Although, just to make it a little bit more complex, we did have a 50 CFS cold water in one of our TMDLs that was approved by the State Board, just for your background.
Right, and that's fine, but the water right decisions have to go through their own.
Oh, no, 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 we do not want to. Your water rights are sacred.
Well, we don't want to be there.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's
I concur with John on that. You know, the basin plans can have those standards, but you can't really meaningfully implement them without a water rights connection. And you all have been really good about communicating with our water rights division up front. You know, that's pretty key in terms of setting anything up in the basin plan. And you know, and on sea level rise standards, that has come up in our planning committee discussions. You know, in terms of, and I think we'd also want to be coordinating with the Coastal Commission or the Bay, you know, the BCDC in the Bay Area for those type of discussions. But you know, there's a range. You know, as you saw with with the grassroots efforts in Humboldt Bay. You know, and so. You know, we'll be open to those discussions, but it'll have to be a multi-agency endeavor, you know, at the state level to come up with recommended planning for that. But it's going to be a theme, you know, in the next 20 years, because as the wastewater infrastructure that was really developed in the 70s and 80s along the coast is going into disrepair, it's getting very rusty, like an old, you know, an old used car, and it needs to be rebuilt. And particularly in the Central Coast, but somewhat in the North Coast too, the resource value of the wastewater, it needs to be looked at. And as we redesign wastewater treatment facilities, we got to look at, you know, are they going to be inundated by sea level rise? But then also, can they be re-engineered to be the precursor to drinking water resources as population increases and we're more vulnerable to climate change issues? So, you know, more to come. But there's an opportunity as the treatment facilities become in disrepair to rethink, you know, and not just rebuild as is, but think about how to repurpose it for water resources, energy resources, even soil, you know, just as resource recovery systems. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the board? Okay, we will move on to public forum, which is the time when members of the public